Support for this podcast comes from Frito-Lay and the 2023 Snack Bracket Championship. The Frito-Lay Snacker Challenge is underway, and fans are voting on their favorite snacks to crown champion. We're talking about primetime matchups between the best 64 snacks in the land. Will Ruffles Ridges reign supreme? Can Doritos defend their dynasty? Or will Smart Food use their smarts for a surprise upset? Only you can decide. Get in on all the action for a chance to win up to $1,000 or a year's worth of snacks. Let your snacks be heard. Just go to FritoLaySnackIt.SBNation.com to vote and enter for a chance to win. No purchase necessary. Sweepstakes ends April 3rd, 2023. Void where prohibited. Year's worth of snacks awarded in the form of 52 coupons, each good for one bag of chips. See official rules at FritoLaySnackIt.SBNation.com.
Can I do my ideal starters?
What's up?
So when I do my ideal starters, can I include players not on the team?
You can, but you're getting a little extra ideal because then I'll just start adding Steph and Jokic and stuff like that. All right. You ready, bud?
Yeah.
All right. We will go in 3, 2. Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Can You Dig It? A podcast by the Silver Screen and Roll Network. I am one of your co-hosts, Jacob Rude, and we have our new co-host. Negotiations have more or less been finalized. They are doing much better than the Lakers trade negotiations have this summer. But joining me today and throughout the season, Hani Ahmadian. Bud, how are you doing? How did you handle the dire summer as we head into the preseason and training camp?
Oh, I'm in terrible shape. I joked about this on Twitter yesterday of like, regardless of how bad the Lakers are, I always find it in myself to become delusional about their chances at some point. So I'll get there, but it's gonna be a challenge with this team for sure. but having said that, very excited to be joining the podcast. I'm hearing that Silver Screen and Roll needs to apply some levers to be able to afford me, but I'm sure that we'll get that settled down. But yeah, I'm pretty excited about being here, and I don't know how excited I am about the Lakers, but I'm excited about talking about them quite a lot this year.
Yeah, it's I don't know if it was just how things played out last season and last preseason that jaded me, but I just haven't been able to get up the same level of excitement this year for this team. And I was excited last year. I was apprehensive about Russ, but there was still a level of excitement that, you know, AD had a full off season and LeBron had a full off season and they were integrating Russ and they still had a championship winning coach. And there was a lot of questions about the rest of the team, but there was excitement there. Do you feel that level of excitement this season? How does it compare to last season?
It's weird because I think that with all the challenges that they had in doing anything this offseason, I do think that like this team got quite a bit better. Like if you go up and down the roster, I think the players that they lost and the players that they brought in, there is an improvement there, but I also don't have any sort of feeling that they're really going to be competing for a title. So I don't really have that excitement, and I haven't really had it because I think I realized fairly early on in the offseason that more than likely this is going to be a year where they kind of punt. You know, obviously they try to compete, but that they're not really going to be putting in the risk of making a major move. And I'm not necessarily against that, but obviously in terms of this season, my excitement level is diminished because of that.
Yeah, this team just feels incomplete, and that's probably leading into why I don't have a certain level of excitement is that we spent most of the summer expecting there to be one other pretty sizable move to the roster that never came. And it's still out there. It still could happen. And it potentially will. I mean, we can start there. That wasn't where I was going to start, but Zach Lowe reported in his podcast on Friday that the Lakers are not having any deep trade discussions with anybody. The Utah Jazz and the San Antonio Spurs neither have intriguing trade packages, especially now that Bogdanović is not going to be included. And so they're not having any type of discussions with anybody. Does that surprise you? Is there anybody you think they should be having discussions with right now?
I think as a concept, I have not been as sort of adamant as a lot of Lakers fans of, you know, we can't waste another year of LeBron and AD, got to move the picks with Russ to get anything. I have been sort of against that thought because in my mind, we've already thrown away so many assets, already took that risk with Russ and it failed. You know, lost some valuable role players, lost another first round pick doing that. I don't really want to throw away more assets to try and correct that mistake if it's not a move that I feel very strongly is going to put them into a level where they're contending for the title. So there's like individual trades that I think are worth it. For example, you know, I don't know if you ever really heard what the exact trade would be, but if there is a way where Russ and two first round picks gets you Buddy Hield and Miles Turner, I am supportive of that because I think that is a good enough return for this year. Plus, I think Miles Turner is somebody that you could sign to an extension and then eventually trade away for an asset to kind of recoup that if you think that AD is going to be your long-term center after LeBron is gone. So yeah, there's individual trades where I would be okay with it, but it's not really surprising to me that Pelinka and the Lakers don't really want to add to, you know, like have a snowball effect of, oh, we traded for Russ, it didn't work, now we're going to try to fix it, and now we're going to keep losing assets, and it snowballs way down the line. I think there is a good argument to be made that the smarter decision is to, you know, try to improve this year, try to make the playoffs, but kind of go into this year knowing that Russ is going to be gone in a year, you're going to have some cap space and you're going to be able to actually get some decent role players to come and join LeBron and AD for the one or two more years that we have of that duo. The only thing that worries me about that thought is that I know the Lakers are not really going to go after role players with that money. They're going to try to go sign another third star, and I'm kind of against that idea. I just don't think that they're going to be able to build a deep enough team that can win a title if they go for a third star, especially if it's someone like Kyrie who you can't really rely on at all. And you know, that was a trade that I was against, for example, of Russ and two first round picks for Kyrie, because I didn't think that was going to improve the team enough to win a title.
It's weird, hilarious, odd, on brand, whatever you want to say, that the Lakers won a title with LeBron, AD, and a bunch of role players, and they just seem diametrically opposed to building that type of team again. And they want Russ, they want Kyrie, and you're right. If they have cap space, they're going to try to turn that into a third star. But the maybe encouraging thing, if you are in favor of trading Russ, is that the Lakers reportedly are open to trading first round picks for long-term money and the right deal. Zach Lowe also reported that he thought if the Lakers went to the Pacers right now and said Russ and two firsts for Buddy and Miles, it would be a done deal, that the Pacers would say yes to it. Is there a reason you think that the Lakers aren't doing that? I mean, to me, the way I see it is that makes them better and perhaps good. I don't know that raises them to title contention, and I think that might be why the Lakers are holding off on it.
That might be it. I think you can make an argument either way. I think Miles Turner is a really, really good player, but also somebody that has been kind of inconsistent at times and hasn't really played on great teams. You know, the Pacers have been a playoff team, I think, a couple times with him, but never been like an amazing like title contending or even like Eastern Conference Finals contending team. So you don't really know what to expect from him. Buddy Hield is another sort of like situational player to me. He's a very poor defender, but obviously a great three-point shooter. So yeah, I think you can make an argument either way of whether that makes him a title contender, and that might be the reason why. I think there's also the issue of, I believe Miles Turner would be a free agent after this mm-hmm. year, and then they would have to pay him quite a lot of money to keep him, I would assume. And that might be something that they're not interested in. And if that's the case, then now you're trading two first round picks for a 1 year rental of Miles Turner and a couple of years of Buddy Hield. And that's obviously a different pill to swallow than just getting those two guys and having them long term. So I think there's probably arguments either way. That is really the one trade. Although I think the Utah stuff has been a little like less reported of what exactly the package would be. But that Indiana trade has been the one trade that I have been very like secure in wanting that to be done. If it does get done, even if I do understand some of the arguments against it.
Yeah, it just feels at this point that trade's going to be there. Nobody else is going in for Buddy or Miles right now. There's yeah. nothing impending, so there isn't necessarily a sense of urgency. I always felt like the deadline was by training camp because I really didn't think Russ was going to be here for training camp. Realistically, the deadline to trade him now is literally the trade deadline, and he's going yeah. to gain in value as the season goes along, and maybe the Lakers sit back and see if somebody that was expected to contend flames out and they can jump on an opportunity. But the fact is Russ is here. And the other big news over the weekend was the Lakers have a potential starting lineup that Tarvin Ham revealed. I got to say, it was really odd to have a coach just say what lineup he was using in practice and not protect them like their top secret information. During practice, Darvin Ham says he's been using Russ, Kendrick Nunn, LeBron, AD, and Damian Jones as the starting lineup. What were your thoughts when hearing that, and what are your thoughts kind of on that being the starting lineup?
It's very interesting because I think when you read all of the quotes that Ham has been saying, basically since his presser when he first got hired and all the way through training camp, he talks a lot about having a four out, one in system, you know, one center and everybody else playing on the perimeter. When you look at the lineup, you got two, three guys on there that are very much not three-point shooters between Russ, AD, and Damian Jones. Now, they did say that Damian Jones was taking some threes in that scrimmage game yesterday and that he's comfortable taking them in the corner. AD obviously takes threes, even though he really struggled with that last year. And same with Russ, he'll take some, but he also does not have anybody within 15 feet of him when he does. So yeah, I think it's a little surprising what they're going for. I guess I can see it from maybe building the defense first and kind of looking at that 2020 team with having the two centers. And I think AD mentioned this as well, that Damian Jones kind of playing next to him is a pretty similar sort of archetype as JaVale McGee was, and somebody who can block shots and then just be a quote unquote vertical spacer, somebody who can go up for lobs and you know, take a defender with him that way, even if he's not spacing out to the 3-point line. And then the other interesting thing about this, I think, for me, is that Kendrick Nunn seems to be getting a lot of praise in training camp. Obviously, for one, he has been sort of in that starting group, and Darvin Ham's talked about him having really good days, really good practices. That's a really positive sign, because I think he is maybe the ultimate X factor, other than obviously how Russ gets integrated if he does stay. But sort of the ultimate X factor on the team is how good is Kendrick Nunn. We literally have not seen him play with the Lakers since last preseason when they went 0-6 or whatever it was. So yeah, if he is a guy that can, whether he starts or plays off the bench, I don't really care. But if he's a guy that is kind of performing at that level where he is winning that battle in training camp, then that is a really positive sign, I think.
It's funny, as you were talking about the lineup and how theoretically Damian Jones and Russ could be corner 3-point shooters. And I'm thinking, yeah, that would work. Maybe AD in the corner. And you very quickly run out of corners to put this, this lineup out there on the floor with, because for one, and I'm probably like a lot of other Laker fans, probably because of how he played when he was last year. I don't think of Damian Jones as a 3-point shooter in any way. When he was last year, he took 17 shots and 13 of them were within 3 feet and the other four were within 10 feet. Last season in Sacramento, he attempted 29 3-pointers. He hit 10 of them. We'll see to what degree he's going to have a willingness, because we've seen it's one thing to do it in practice. We even saw, like, with Dwight Howard last year, like, everything we saw in practice, it seemed decent. He did not take them in games except for sparingly and not really in any consistent manner. Damian Jones only took 7 threes in the corner last year, but he was 8 of 19 on non-corner threes. I don't know how it would look, how it would work. I don't love the idea of it because, as you said, this does not seem to fit the 4-out-1-in style. Damian Jones, Thomas Bryant talked and said that they don't care who starts, that they're going to play. They're the two centers. They don't care who starts. Do you care who starts between them?
But before I answer that question, one more note on the Damian Jones 3-point thing. Darvin Ham sort of made a joke about if he was able to make Robin Lopez take 3-pointers, then he'll be able to make Damian Jones take 3-pointers. And he's right. If you look at Robin Lopez's like 3-point shots per season, he only played 1 year in Milwaukee with Darvin Ham there. The year before that, he took 31. The year after that, he took 18. The year in Milwaukee, he took 105 threes.
Oh, my God.
And he hit a third of them. Obviously not great, but for a guy that never shoots threes, not terrible. So
he shot 38% on corner threes. Robin Lopez did. He was 21 of 55. If Damian Jones does that, put him in the corner. That's great.
Yeah. So I do think that it's believable, at least, that they do want him to take threes. Whether that's something that lasts all season or not, who knows? I think a lot of bigs kind of start the year taking threes. Like you said, we saw Dwight do it. JaVale's done it at times. And then by the end of the year, it kind of like fizzles out and they stop doing it. So we'll see. In terms of who I, or if I care, if Damian Jones or Thomas Bryant starts, yes and no. I think the main thing about one of them starting to me is that it pushes LeBron back to the three. And that's the most important thing, because this team does not have enough wings for LeBron to be playing as a power forward again. I actually think LeBron is probably better as a power forward, but I think they just need him to play as a three, and they need to play a bigger starting lineup just for the sake of rotations to work out with the lack of wing players that they have right now. I do think it's a more seamless fit with Thomas Bryant. He is a guy that has shot threes throughout his career, has been decent at it, not amazing, but enough of a threat that I think he would space the floor and help AD out. But at the same time, and he does still offer that sort of like lob threat that Damian Jones does as well. I think the only thing is that he doesn't seem to be quite as good of a rim protector as Damian Jones would be. And it just seems like this team is very hell-bent and focused on fixing the defensive issues from last season first, before they really work on the offensive stuff. So from that perspective, I understand it. I think by the end of the year, maybe we'll see Thomas Bryant start, just because he's a little bit of a better fit, and it'll take away some of the pressure on the offensive end that LeBron and Russ and AD will have, just because he can space the floor. But I'm not too concerned about Damian Jones starting right now. I think just later on in the year that could change.
I mean, to me, and stop me if you heard this before, but it's pretty much tied to whether Russ is going to be starting or not. Sure. Because if Russ is starting, I mean, he's the one in the 4-out 1-in. And so you would want somebody like Thomas Bryant, who is a more natural three-point shooter, a more proven three-point shooter than anything else. And I would be much more comfortable with that if Patrick Beverley is starting, or even Dennis Schroeder. I would probably feel better about starting Damian Jones, because those guys, maybe not as much with Schroeder, more with Patrick Beverley. I would feel a lot better about them being a more natural spacer as a three-point shooter. So a lot of this hinges on Russ, as it has for the last year. This is not my preferred starting lineup, shockingly. And I'll ask you first, what is your preferred ideal starting lineup, which is a way of me of phrasing it and saying that you can bench Russ if you want to. What is your ideal starting lineup?
That's a very difficult question to answer.
Yeah.
I think the idea of Russ playing off the bench makes a lot of sense from a basketball, like, tactical standpoint, because mm-hmm. I think he will play against worse defenses. He'll be able to run more. He's going to have athletic players next to him. His defending isn't going to be as big of an issue as it is with the starting lineup. All of that is true. But having said that, from like a just sort of like psychological standpoint, and obviously we don't know these dudes, but you know, considering how last season went and some of his let's say disagreements with the coaching staff that have even, you know, sort of carried over to this training camp, where he's kind of throwing a little bit of shade at them, saying that he likes the energy of a new coach and all of that, I would be worried that if you bench him, you kind of lose him. And that's sort of the reasoning that Frank Vogel had last year of why they never benched him. And I think, you know, if Westbrook is going to be on this team the whole year, you can't risk that. You know, he's just too important of a player. And I don't think that the Lakers are good enough around the margins that they can just send him home and become a contender. Maybe they can. I mean, maybe the vibes would just be worth it, and that would send them into the playoffs. That's a legitimate thing, I think. But if they're going to go deep in the playoffs, I think they need Russ integrated, and they need him playing well. And I think because of that, I would want him to start and get integrated with the other players. Now, you can work out rotations and still play him with bench lineups as much as you want, but I think the title of a starter is still pretty important. For Russ. So I would include him, and obviously LeBron and AD would be included as well. And then I think, as I discussed, I think Thomas Bryant would be my ideal starting center, just marginally over Damian Jones because of the spacing reasons. And the Nefis spot is like really up for grabs. There's a lot of players that you can make a case for. And really, I think it kind of comes down to who can play enough defense to make up for Russ, and then also be able to hit enough threes to make up for Russ. And I think the guy on the team that I would trust most with that is probably Austin Reeves. Mm-hmm. Now, like, I don't think Austin was a good three-point shooter last year either. Maybe can improve. Pretty solid defender though, and he can cover for guys pretty okay one-on-one. Really good help defender, I think. And he, you know, the playmaking probably isn't as important in that lineup because they have Russ and LeBron and whatever AD can give, but it's good to have players that aren't one-dimensional and just kind of stand in the corner and wait for threes as well. So right now I think I would go with Austin Reeves. I think like Lonnie Walker could maybe go in there. Maybe Kendrick Nunn is legitimately playing out of his mind and is worth a look. There's a lot of players that make sense, but I think I would go for Austin Reeves. Plus, he has a little bit more size than most players on this team.
Yeah, he's legitimately probably going to have to be the backup small forward on this team, which concerning a little bit, but we'll see how that goes. I fully understand and your argument for Russ. I think that's why they probably need to start the season with him as a starter. I don't think it's going to go well, and I would hope and maybe to some degree expect Darvin Ham to have a very quick leash on him. And if that does not go well, he will not be the starter. He would not be my ideal starting five heading into the season. I would go LeBron and AD, obviously. I would also include Austin Reeves. I would put Patrick Beverley in there, and you can have LeBron be the kind of de facto point guard like he was in the title team. Patrick Beverley can play it a little bit as well. Even Austin Reeves has in the past said he wanted to. But LeBron can be the point guard there. And then, honestly, at that point, I think you could go either Damian Jones or Thomas Bryant because you have enough shooting around. I would probably go Damian Jones just because I think he's a little bit better defensively. I like that kind of vertical lob threat. That team would look something close and kind of archetype to what the team was that won the title. At least that starting five. So, yeah, it'd be, Pat Bev, Austin Reeves, LeBron, AD, Damian Jones. Again, they're not going to bench Russ anytime to start. We'll see how long that gets. Maybe he comes out and does play well. I'd love nothing more, but I've seen this song and dance a lot. He's going to get his shot, if nothing else, to play well. And that's going to start tonight, the Lakers' first preseason game. Well, technically, we don't know if he's going to play, but we'll talk about that. We'll preview the game tonight and some things we're looking forward to here in just a moment. So Lakers open the preseason tonight with a game against the Kings, 7:30 Pacific on NBA TV. We don't know if the big three, I guess if they're still considered a big three, LeBron, AD, and Russ, are going to be playing. Darvin Ham said after practice he hoped so. Quote, if possible, yeah, but he was going to sit down on Sunday with his staff and make a decision. What is your thoughts, expectations? What are you looking forward to or going to be looking for in this preseason game?
Let's start with sort of like the intangible part of it. I think we talked about this right before we got on, the vibes of the team being awful last year.
Yes.
Starting out the preseason, I'm like, wins and losses don't really matter, but having a good performance with good vibes is really important, I think. And that'll kind of set them in going in the right direction. And I know that the Lakers are aware of it because they've talked about, you know, the bigger guys playing more in preseason than they did last year. And I think that's part of that reasoning. So I would love to see, you know, just sort of a little bit of aggression from those guys, obviously within reason, don't want anybody getting hurt. Really looking forward to seeing what Patrick Beverley is going to do in his first preseason game as a Laker. I think that is going to be hilarious. And I'm sure he's going to be looking to really like earn the respect and love of Lakers fans, since he's been kind of a villain for the Lakers in the past. So, and you know, in terms of the vibes, I think he's going to be definitely like a tone setter for the Lakers all year. So really looking forward to that. And then I guess from a more basketball standpoint, you know, the Damian Jones and Thomas Bryant sort of quote unquote battle for that spot, even if they say they don't care about it, I think that's going to be interesting. We obviously haven't seen either of those guys with the Lakers for a couple of years. Damian Jones, last time we saw him, was super raw, but sort of was performing well just purely off of his energy. And by all accounts, he's improved a lot and was playing pretty well with the Kings last year. So really interested to see his improvements. Same with Thomas Bryant in terms of, you know, his shooting. That's something that he didn't really do with the Lakers before he went to Washington. So looking forward to that. And then, see what Russ does. How's Russ going to perform in his first reintroduction as a Laker? You know, there's you know, some reporting from that scrimmage game, at least from the open portion of it that the media saw of him being really engaged off the ball and screening for other players and that stuff that I think Russ has always kind of talked about doing and at times shown a willingness to do it. But when things get tough, he's kind of reverted back to his gut instinct, which is, you know, holding on to the ball and driving into the paint and throwing off wild layups and stuff like that. So it'll be interesting to see sort of his commitment to that role and how well he can play it and integrate with LeBron and AD.
I am fully in, like, do it before I believe it with Russ and all the off-ball stuff. I wrote an article with video of Russ setting screens in a game last season. I can't remember the opponent, maybe Memphis. And it was the only game that it happened. And I was really excited for that game. And I thought, this is dope. This is something that could really be something. And then they just didn't do it anymore. So do it for more than one game and I will get excited about it. I would disagree that wins and losses don't matter. It's very specific to this Lakers team because the vibes were so awful last year in the preseason after going 0-1, I think they played six games, 0-1 whatever. They need some type of victory. I'm not saying it's like a must win game, but like, I can't do 0-6 again. Like I cannot have it. LeBron sitting here talking about how he'll start playing better when the games matter, stuff like that. I can't sit here and listen to that again. So specifically for much better vibes, win at least a couple of these. I don't know if that is specifically tonight. I don't know. Like I said, there are six games they could do it, but win something, like give me something small to build on, because when I was talking to Raj last week, we talked after the show about just how awful the vibes were last season. That's what we can end on here briefly. How much better do the vibes need to be this preseason? Does it feel like they're better? I know that's not a tangible thing, but like, just looking back to last year, that was such an omen for what was about to come. How much better does it need to feel this season?
I don't really have a good grasp currently of what the vibes are.
Yeah, I mean, it's not remotely tangible. Yeah, it's not remotely tangible. I know that is a very weird. I mean, this kind of goes back to what we were saying at the beginning, is that like, we're not excited about this. Maybe other people are, and maybe the vibes are better. It certainly sounds like, from quotes from Patrick Beverley, from even Russ, like you were saying, kind of throwing shots a little bit, from Kendrick Nunn, that the vibes seem to be better. I guess a different way of phrasing it is, how important is that to this preseason?
Oh, it's huge. I'm a big proponent of factoring in vibes. It's my like go-to phrase in any basketball analysis at this point, mostly because I don't know anything else about basketball. I do believe in it. I do think that there are some aspects that are positive steps in that direction. I think, you know, we talked about Patrick Beverley as sort of like a tone setter. I think that is genuinely going to be an important aspect of this team. Same with Darvin Ham. I think teams, like professional sports teams, any sport, always tend to get like a little bit of a bump when they have a new coach. Mm-hmm. See that in midseason a lot. It's a little different, I guess, when it's, you know, in an off-season addition. But Darvin Ham definitely seems like a very like motivational kind of guy that players will want to play for. So hopefully that carries through. And yeah, you know, if they win a couple preseason games, maybe that'll prolong the inevitable sideline dust up from the second game of the season last year to like the fourth game of the season. I don't know. Well, baby steps is kind of what I'm looking for.
I've blocked out so much of last season. I totally forgot about that as well. Again, a horrible omen for the season that they tried to just brush off in the moment as like, oh, well, we just are both competitive. Everything from the first like month of the season last year was just more ominous than we ever realized. Hopefully tonight, ominous is not something we used to describe the Lakers and their game against the Kings. Hani, thank you for coming on. I'm excited to do this podcast throughout the season. We will be back next week to recap a Lakers game. They will be playing the Warriors next Sunday, so we'll have the recap on that. We'll have recaps on this week's games coming up, including tonight's on the network. So be sure you guys are subscribed. We will see you guys again next week. Until then, for Hani, thank you all for tuning in and have a great one.